Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to this week's Long Final Interview. This week, we're talking with author and pilot Michael Trainor. Michael is the author of two large hardback volumes, totaling around 600 pages, including almost 800 images, called Petticoat Pilots, from 1909 to 1939. Michael tells the story of 12 trailblazing women. He spent 8 years researching the lives of these women. With an introduction by no less than the president, Michael D. Higgins, it's a remarkable piece of work. Michael joined me on the line from his home, and before we talked about his latest book, I was curious about his own flying history.
It started in Limerick, out at the great legendary Cúna. Had a great time there. We moved to Limerick in 1987, and I joined the Dublin Airport Flying Club at the old Iona ramp there. And I've been part of that club ever since. Just purely leisure and pleasure flying, strictly. Never went the commercial route or anything like that.
What was the day that you decided you were going to give it a go?
I worked in the bank back in those days in Limerick, and it was a customer of ours that came in to us one day, and Dr. Ali Khan was his name. He was the chairman of the Limerick Flying Club at the time, and the conversation just came up, and I said, look, I'll go out. Got hooked and addicted, and that was it, ever since, over 40 years ago. So 40 great years of leisure and pleasure flying, I must admit.
Do you remember the first aircraft you flew?
It was a Rally 100 Alpha Uniform Papa. Yeah, that's what I cut my teeth on. That's what they had back in those days. Two of them, Alpha Uniform Juliet, Alpha Uniform Papa.
Cúna would have been a bit of a challenge as well for a new pilot.
That's a very good word. Yes, I recall the flight test. It was with Captain Bob Reedy back in the day. And the flight test lasted all of 15 minutes. I think a lot of examiners would probably cringe at that, but his attitude was, after two circuits at Cúna, and Cúna then in those days, Michael, was considerably shorter and narrower than it is today. And his attitude was that if you can land and take off the way you did at Cúna a couple of times, then you must be good enough for a license. The 15-minute flight test was successful, we'll say. So, yeah, it was challenging.
Bring me forward a little bit in time then to the extent where you found yourself in Dublin and the Dublin Airport Flying Club.
That was challenging because we had very little air traffic control or anything like that. And we certainly hadn't any line traffic, busy traffic in Cúna. So moving to Dublin Airport from probably one of the smallest airfields in the country to the biggest was definitely a challenge. I progressed there, got checked out in Office M. Cessna's is what they operate. And Alpha Whiskey Echo was one of them. We just went on, enjoyed it, started doing foreign trips and stuff like that. So,
you mentioned foreign trips, and yeah. I don't want you to gloss over those, because when you read about some of the destinations you took those Cessnas to, they might make an average PPL extremely envious.
I suppose that's what you would call using the privileges of your license to the extent that you could. I never progressed beyond being a VFR PPL. And we started going to continental trips, and they just got further and further. And I suppose a few of the good ones were with our CFI, Robin Mandel, and one of our other Alan Duffy was one of our other club members. We did a nice circumnavigation of the Mediterranean, involving I think it was 14 countries in about 5 or 6 days. So it was a pleasant one. That was a good one.
Did that go off smoothly?
No. despite all the planning, we invariably didn't even end up in the country we were supposed to be in, never mind the airport. Weather determined a lot of it, and we had a number of diversions for various reasons. But we succeeded in getting to, I think Greece was the furthest, Morocco in North Africa was the furthest south. So, we that was a good trip. I did another one with a son of mine, Dara. He's also a PPL. And one of the other trips we did was across the Alps. We went to Austria and crossed over the Alps into Italy and back into Switzerland and home.
Another flight that you were particularly associated with, which was the last general aviation flight out of Dublin Airport.
Yes, 18th of October 2008, we had been, I suppose, under pressure to get out of Dublin Airport because it was getting congested and there was various reasons that just GA wasn't suitable there at the time, particularly after the demise of Iona.
Echo Indian November Golf, with the wind 242 degrees at 12 knots, and you're due for takeoff runway 28. So we shall left one out direct to Weston at 1500 feet.
Yeah, that last flight was memorable, we'll say.
Who was on board?
I had no hesitation in bringing Piers Cahill, who was the man who brought GA to Dublin Airport 50 years previously. Coleman Corcoran was the other person. Coleman had been a great help to us when we were, I suppose, during our final days there when he was on the board, or was certainly on at the meetings with the Aerient as it was, or on the Dublin Air DAA at the time. And the final guy I picked was Aidan Barker. Aidan was the last guy to get a PPL at Dublin Airport. And I suppose I picked him because he represented, if anything, the hundreds of other guys that had got PPLs at Dublin Airport. So he was the last, and he was, I suppose, one of the choices that I had to make. Know who would occupy the fourth seat. So we had a wonderful send off. Eddie Goggins facilitated with a little maneuver down the runway. And the Dublin Airport Fire Brigade, they offered two tenders to do a water arch. The rescue helicopter did a nice hover taxi down the runway for us as well. So we went off in style.
Are you still flying?
Yes. Yeah, I still have a current license. The last trip I did really was the one last year, with, again, was Dara, my son, which was, I asked him, would he do me a favour and an honour of going to an area I hadn't been to, which was Norway, Sweden, Finland, up above the Arctic Circle to Lapland. And the two of us set off on our little aircraft. And we did about 30 hours, and 11 of which were over water, being the North Sea, a couple of crossings, and the Baltic Sea and the Irish Sea. Yeah, it was pretty okay. It was good. It was very good.
What was the crew resource management like between father and son?
We're still talking. We're still good. Yeah. No. Dara's a great guy. He's good.
Well, Michael, you have also been extremely busy from the point of view of the books that you've brought out. And I want to mention a couple of them today. But let's go back to the first one, which is Through the Clouds Over Limerick and Beyond, 1997. What was the thinking behind that book?
We were coming up to the 50th anniversary of the Limerick Flying Club, which was founded in 1947. And the CFI down there at the time, Tony Doyle, asked me if I would put together something about the story of Limerick, not alone just the Flying Club, but aviation in the Limerick area at the time as well, because it goes back to the days of ballooning. One of the early balloon flights in Ireland was 1784, which took place in Limerick as well. So we covered all of that area as well. nice to get about, but it was a real amateur production, but still it was a start anyway.
Well, I'm smiling because, you know, there are a lot of people would think about doing something like that, but you actually went ahead and did it. And I'm wondering what that took.
I'll tell you how it actually started as well. There was some legendary characters down there in Coona, and they used to be talking about the old days. And then I just realized, God, you know, lads, you know, it'd be nice to document this and to record it. And I did several tape recordings of some of the older characters associated with aviation in Limerick. And it's good to have them on record. And then I suppose put the whole thing together and just hit the typewriter and keep going. That was it, yeah.
And then you turned your attention to the history of Iona. And there'll be people listening to us in this chat who might have even gone through there, through the Irish Aero Club.
When I retired, Michael, in 2000, and one of the things, Ronan Lee called round to our house one day.
People will know Ronan as a film cameraman, I think.
Yeah. Correct, yes, an RTE cameraman at the time. And our discussions came around to talking about the grandfathers of aviation, namely Pierce, and his story hadn't really been told. And I got a real terrific response from Pierce, and he literally opened his records to me and gave me every form of assistance, photographs and memorabilia of the years of Iona, which started back in the 1950s and until their demise in 1994.
I imagine there might have been some stories from Pierce that didn't make the book.
You are dead right. And not alone from Pierce, but from some of the other characters that were there as well. When I would be interviewing them and you'd be told, now look, you can't print this or I'm going to lose my license or something like that. So there's a lot of the stories, I'm afraid, have to stay on bar stools. They didn't make the book. No, they didn't.
And that leads us to the chat we're having now, because I have in front of me here two amazing volumes with the title Petticoat Pilots. And I suppose I'm obliged to find out the story of it and also the story of the title, because, Michael, we live in very politically correct times and the title might raise an eyebrow or two. Can you put that in context very quickly for us so we're safe?
Yeah, how the title came about was there was an air race. It was the first all-women's air race in America in the 1920s. The journalists of the day dubbed it the Powderpuff Derby, and they christened the ladies the Petticoat Pilots. And there was another book written about that event, so I latched onto that name. But I did, yeah, right, I did ask several ladies would their noses be out of joint with such a title. But no, they thought it was very apt. It suited the period of the time, being, you know, a century ago, the 1920s or thereabouts. And yeah, it worked.
As I said, even though people can't see you and I having a chat at the moment, we can certainly do our best to describe the quality of the production is superb. But it's no accident that, what, there's almost 8 years of research in it, is there?
Yes, three of the ladies, I picked 12 ladies, or I didn't even know some of them when I started the research over that eight-year period. But three of them had been documented. That's Lady Heath, Lady Bailey, and Lillian Bland. So I kind of put them to one side, you know, haven't got the permission of the authors of their books. So the other nine turned out to be quite a bit of a challenge in a way, because it was all original research. It was going to various libraries, and I only started off with a couple of names, but eventually it grew. You know, when you'd be researching one story, you'd find out of another lady. And I was very, very fortunate with all 12 families that they facilitated by going to attics and going to various rooms in their houses that hadn't been disturbed for years and years. And they found, between them all, about 800 photographs nearly of their granny or their great aunt, which had never seen the light of day. So I was really lucky in that regard. So many of the photographs in that have never been published before, but they tell a story of, I suppose, the achievements of women of that generation about 100 years ago, which we kind of started honouring the 1916 and thereabouts ladies. So it grew from that we're honouring the achievements of women of that period. And I decided to do it in a biographical kind of format, treat each chapter separately and give the ancestry of the ladies. And again, all the families were wonderfully cooperative, given their family history, and bring it right up to when the ladies themselves learned to fly and the difficulties they encountered and the challenges and their achievements, and bring it as much as possible up to the present day, or certainly cover their entire lifestyle with each of the 12 ladies throughout chapters.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah. That plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
So the books cover a period from 1909 to 1939. Why did you pick that span?
The first of the ladies started in 1909. Violet Dunville, she was a balloonist, and she did air races around Europe in a balloon. And 1939 was the cutoff, because that was when women went over to England to join the ATA. They might have gone abroad, and it would have been difficult. I'll leave that for another author to cover that period of women. So the 20s and 30s was the pioneering age for a lot of these women when they did extraordinary flights, really, not alone in Ireland and England, but they traveled America, they went to Canada, and two of them did amazing flights when you consider that the aircraft of the time were open cockpit and very basic instruments, and they flew down to Cape Town in South Africa from London, 1928 and 29. And their non-existent navigation aids, they were tearing pages out of atlases nearly as they went along, trying to figure out and follow railway lines, follow rivers. And they were two of the more notable flights that they did.
Well, you know, it's a piece of social history as well, because you're talking about a new country. We were finding our own identity. And also the impression that people might have, you know, if they're of a certain age, is that, you know, we didn't hear about women pilots in Aer Lingus until the late 70s, in fact, here in this country. But these were pioneering women in their own right. Were they all ladies, aristocracy? Were they all women of means?
Yes. In 11 of the 12 cases, they came from, they were descended from aristocratic backgrounds. So they either were born that way or they married titled gentlemen with plenty of money. So it was really only one of them that was the rags to riches story, which was a lady from Achill Island, Nancy Corrigan. And at 16 years of age, she went from poverty-stricken Achill to Cleveland, Ohio, and she worked her way through the gentry houses over there. But she was a beautiful woman, gorgeous woman, and she eventually ended up as a model in New York, where she was well paid, and she used her earnings from her modeling career to fund her, well, what turned out to be her secret flying lessons in the beginning. Her parents and her employers didn't know anything about her her secret lessons until they read it on the front page of the paper, where she sold it after 4.5 hours.
4.5 hours.
Yes. Yeah.
What were the practicalities of learning to fly then? I mean, where what was the licensing process, or where did they learn?
Well, most of the Irish women went to London, because the London Aeroplane Club was probably the first proper training ground for a lot of them. In fact, three of them were there at the one time, what was called the Stag Lane Trio. Stag Lane was being the part of London where the Aero Club was based. And from 1925 onwards, Lady Heath being the first of them to go over there. And that's where most of them actually learned to fly, was at the London Club. So it was nothing in Ireland. The first Irish lady was a lady called Shamrock Trench from Galway. And she learned in Baldonnell in 1931. So that was the first, we'd say, homegrown Irish female pilot.
Did any of them qualify to a commercial level?
Yes, Lady Heath got a position with KLM after her marathon trip down to South Africa. They employed her as a co-pilot. But sadly, it didn't last very long, because I think KLM weren't long in existence at the time. And
what year are we talking?
1929. And she, I think they developed a fear that if there was an incident with a woman pilot, that their reputation could be damaged. So that's the era you were living in, and that's how difficult it was for women.
And that's I suppose, a notion that stayed on for another 50 years after that. When you spend that length of time, as you've done, researching these people's lives and, you know, looking at photographs of them, etc., I'm curious to know, was there any one of the people or other that you'd love to have met?
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of that one. That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that one, Michael. No, I think as I was researching them, I was only doing about two a year, and each of them fascinated me at the time. So, no, I would like to have met them all, actually. You
know? I thought you might say that. Tell me about the Limerick lady, Sophie Pierce.
That's Lady Heath. Yeah, she actually had a very tragic beginning, because her father, when she was only a year old, her father sadly murdered her mother in their family home in Newcastle West. But she was reared by aunts of hers down there. And eventually she was the lady that went to London in 1925. She was the first of the Irish ladies to get her license. She had a good career, other than what I was saying about the KLM involvement, but she did a tour of America. She was also involved in a very tragic accident in Cleveland, where she crashed through the roof of the factory, and she was on death's door, really. So she kind of recovered from that, but some say she didn't really, you know, physically and mentally. She had a steel plate in her skull as a result of the accident. She came back to Ireland, actually, and she ran the flying school at what was the former Kildonan Airfield in Finglas. She took over that from Hugh Cahill, Pierce's father, back in the mid-1930s. So she ran that for a while there. But
Michael, from Limerick to Cork next. And Cecile O'Brien is another one of the women pilots that you featured in the volumes.
Cecile was, she was born in London, but her father, one of the O'Briens, Sir Timothy O'Brien, at a castle down in Lahort Castle, just outside Mallow. And she spent most of her upbringing in that area. They eventually moved back to London, and she joined the London Aero Club along with Lady Heath and Lady Bailey. And she was a great ambassador for aviation. She encouraged it. I suppose she had what you would nearly call air displays of the present day, were what she was trying to develop to encourage aviation. She bought a couple of her own aircraft, which she used to involve in air races and different flights around the UK. Sadly, in 1931, she was ferrying her newly acquired aircraft back to her base in London. She was involved in a very serious accident, which cost her life and the life of her passenger as well. So she became, tragically, the first Irish woman to be killed in an aviation crash.
She'd also lost a leg, though, before that.
Yes, yeah, she had a previous accident. You did your research well, yeah? She had a previous accident where she lost a leg and had grave difficulty in getting her license restored. But eventually the authorities granted her license back again. So she was probably the first amputee, certainly female amputee anyway, to regain her license and recommence flying again.
With your overview of this group of women who were involved in aviation, is there a common characteristic? Can we be that general about it, that they all seem to share?
I suppose they had to be gutsy and they had to be pushy in some regards, because they were, in a lot of cases, they were in a male-dominated area at the time, 1920s and 30s. And I suppose they had to be strong-willed, strong-minded, to persevere with it. They also, I think, with the exception of Nancy Corrigan, they all came from the gentry background, so they had plenty of leisure time, and they were well-heeled. Yeah, they would have been headstrong, I suppose, in some regard, to persevere with it. Like, certainly Nancy Corrigan had a difficult time.
What's next for you?
Leisure and pleasure. Continue.
The next book.
I don't know, Michael. I think I was happy with that one. It finished off very well and it's been very well received. So I'm pleased with that. So I'm not sure what other subjects I can broach at this stage. I'm happy enough.
The untold stories of aviation, possibly, but there you go.
We'll stay on the bar stools.
Michael, if people want to get their hands on the volumes, where can they get them?
I suppose the handiest thing really is, I was very fortunate that a friend of mine has created a website, petticoatpilots.com, and you can either buy it there but my email address or phone number is there, either way, whichever is convenient. And it is in a number of the bookshops around the countryside as well.
And we'll put a link to it as well in the programme notes of this particular podcast as well. Michael Trainor, thank you for joining us on Long Final, and happy landings. And whatever it is the next book is, I'm sure you'll come back and you'll tell us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.